And yet another one.
Yes.
Why will you not leave me alone?
I just can't get past the...
You can't get enough of me? You like looking at this cute face?
I don't even know what to say to that.
I have text message documents that I am cute.
Not from me.
I didn't say it from you, but it's the general consensus of the people who matter.
We're sitting here at our studio.
Fake internet radio studios.
Fake internet radio studios, and there's a big old mirror right in front of us.
Because somebody likes to look at themselves.
And there's a mirror behind you. So
you can see my bald spot.
I can. And let me just say it's something else. We're glad to be back. You know, no one's fired us yet. No one's sent us any mail asking us to stop.
Don't we have a boss to get fired? Well, we do have a boss.
We have a boss, yeah. They're the boss, actually, right now. And they're sending us questions.
Fire him, not me.
Well, then who would you ask?
I would ask Yusi. She's an ass. If it comes down to it, I will start asking your children.
Well, and you'll probably get more listeners. Yusi will be on the show off and on. In fact, you can see her on our live show. She's usually on the live. This is live.
That's
as well.
Who sits with us?
Yeah, yes.
Well, this isn't technically live.
The video episodes.
Yes, we're doing those in front of people.
Yeah, that's when we can't scratch stuff. When it itches, you have to sit there very calmly.
Oh, you can scratch it.
Yeah.
Then we have to put that on a DVD, sell it for $19.95 on our e-store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm talking about scratching feet, by the way.
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah. So
I was actually thinking about my nose.
Yeah, it's just always picking. So we won't even go there. Hungry? Yeah. Speaking of hunger, I'm not hungry because my wife cooked me a shrimp étouffée.
No, you gotta go étouffée.
I'm not French.
I'm French.
Étouffée that was out of this world. I don't typically like étouffée. It's most people make it. It's red. It's sticky. It's like ketchup with shrimp in it.
It is delicious.
It reminds me of
crawfish étouffée.
Crawfish. It all reminds you of going to Long John Silver's and having them give you the fried shrimp basket and you just soak it in ketchup and that's what you eat.
There's nothing wrong with ketchup, sir.
I love ketchup, but I just, you know, it just doesn't appeal to me. But she has found this recipe. And like she usually makes a white étouffée, which my French friends say that's not étouffée. But
you said étouffée correctly.
The word étouffée is actually the word, it means steamed. That's all it means. I found that out. It's pretty interesting.
Really?
It's French word for steamed food, étouffée. So, and I'm willing for someone to go on a website and tell me I'm wrong, but I was watching a cooking show and that's what they said. But anyways, she uses
You're always wrong, though. Even when you're right.
She uses a roux, a gumbo roux.
A roux.
And it is unbelievable. So, we
had that. Did she ever set her roux on fire?
Oh, heavens. Whoever our boss is, I have a request. Okay.
Can I throw you under the bus this episode?
We're on. We're back this week.
Yep. Number
week,
four.
Number four. We're counting. Counting.
Yes.
Episode four. We're on.
I can only count to 16, so after that, we're not going to be in good shape.
I'll take over at that point.
All right.
But... We had an assignment last time.
Yes.
And that assignment
something about
was
technology.
Technology. So I asked you what you thought about what do you think about the use of technology in the church? Do you think that sometimes it can go too far?
I do not know. Because if it was not for technology, we would not be able to be doing what we're doing. You know, we have the video, we have the audio, you know, and just it's just with the internet, you know. Doing all this just helps get the word out further. Now, I'm sure there's some extreme cases where you put the technology before the message, you know, that it could get in the way. But for the most part, I do not believe so.
I personally am a fan of technology.
So am I.
I think we're considering deaf audiences and considering the world.
I don't speak sign language.
The world we live in today. And due to technology, there are deaf people who are able to listen to what we're doing right now.
Can we get people to do this? With
sign
hands?
Language. Last night, if you remember, Hope came by. Hope's a friend of mine. She's a former youth of ours. She speaks sign language. But she's ASL.
Last night?
Last night at church.
I didn't see her.
If she came in, she might have left right before. She went on to church. She would stop by to say hi. She goes to another church.
Okay.
But she would stop by to say hey. At a church we were at, we had a deaf youth. We had a whole deaf youth ministry. We had a lot. And we use technology in a way to keep them from feeling like, all right, just like any other handicap, okay, you're able to come here and, you know, you can fit into what we're doing. When the reality is, what we aim for, we're able to use technology to do is, not only can you fit in, we can make it seem like there's nothing different. And that's the idea, is total inclusion. Total. Okay. And so in technology, you can do, I mean, you can have multiple services going on.
Question. Can we find the technology so blind people can see our videos?
Actually, they're doing pretty interesting work with chips and vision. I read on, it was Yahoo News. You learned a lot on Yahoo.
What's Yahoo?
Yahoo News.
No, Yahoo!
That was beautiful. That was beautiful. But anyways, they were doing this, they're talking about how they're able to use this, like, computers to superimpose images onto their brain, even though they have no, really neat stuff.
That sounds like the Wild Wild West. Like with the collars around the neck and stuff.
Never saw it, but it doesn't matter. The fact is that could very well happen. But I do think, though, there's a time, I have seen where they can be too technology focused, where your budget for your technology is putting a huge strain on the people, and the ministry is just not there. And so now you have all this stuff going on that, you know, I love technology, and we use it, and all we're trying to use it more and more in all the stuff that we do.
All right. So I believe this is a question that was asked, you know, a very important question, like all of them are.
All of them are.
All right. If you pray for something, will it always come true?
No.
Well, actually, I heard something the other day. I don't know if it was you who said it or somebody else I was listening to. That your prayers are always answered, just not always in the way you want them to be.
That's been said, and that's a wise saying, and sometimes the answers take time. Sometimes the answers are not ready. Sometimes, you know, you're ready for something, but the other side of it's not ready.
Yeah.
There's a verse that this whole movement in the Christian church, they call it the Name It, Claim It movement, or the Word of Faith movement, that says that if whatever you ask in Jesus' name, he's going to do. Because Jesus said that. He said it. He said, if you... You know, where two more you gathered, I'll be among you, and whatever you ask in my name, I'll give it to you. And so they use that to say, we want this, 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 as if that's a scriptural
background. It's like they're trying to use God as their own piggy bank.
As their own piggy bank, remote control. When just a little while later, James and John take Jesus aside, there's a quarrel going on, and Jesus kind of finds what's going on. And James and John says, listen, we want to be assigned the left and the right seat. When you come in your kingdom, we want to sit to your left and your right. So now Jesus said, do it. And Jesus' answer to them is, you don't know what you ask. You don't know what you ask. It is not for mine to give. So this was not an empty just ask. This was, you ask it, if it's my will, you'll get it. And God's will is for us to be whole and heal. But this whole prosperity principle, that God is just here to make you rich, and if you have the right faith, you're just gonna walk in absolute financial bliss. It turns a total blind eye to the reality that the true faith is seen in people standing steadfast during the worst of times, the darkest of times. The story of Job would make no sense if Job didn't go through terrible times. Okay. Did God restore it? Oh, yeah, he restored it. But Job went through hell on earth. And every one of these preachers would say Job had a lack of faith. And I've heard some go as far as to say, because Job says, everything I feared on me has come to pass. And that was what Satan used. No, what Satan used, God said, have you seen my servant Job? So have you considered him? It wasn't God opening up Job to be beaten up. It was God allowing Job to show the enemy, I don't serve God for financial gain. I don't serve God for my family. I don't serve God for my blessings. I serve God for who he is. You know, and Job asked a lot of questions during that time. He asked a lot. He was very upset. He voiced his frustration. And when God straightened him up, he repented. He humbled himself. But he never cursed God. We cannot use God as remote control. I'll tell you, every time you pray, God hears. That's all we need to know. To satisfy us. That should satisfy us. That when you speak a word, when you have a thought, God hears it. That should make us feel good. It should also humble us and make us very scared, because he knows what we're thinking. He knows why we're doing stuff. And we say, God, I want you to bless my ministry, but you know you want it because you want that nice house.
Oh, yeah.
He knows what you're doing.
All right. Sounds great. All right. Now, we have another one. I believe you touched a little bit upon it in a blog. I don't know if it was before the question came in on email or what, but it has to do with drinking.
Okay. Oh, here we go. Now we're going to dive straight into it.
All right.
Controversy.
What is the real answer on drinking? Alcohol in, like, those fancy brackets. Mm-hmm. Some believe it is totally wrong and to stay away. Others have said the Bible tells us not to get drunk, but does not make it clear on the issue of wine. So is it wrong to consume alcohol?
Well, the Bible never talks about beer.
Do they not have
beer? It talks about strong drink. They would have had beer. They would have had meads and stuff like that. But wine, you have to think about why wine was around. They didn't have refrigerators. They didn't have that stuff. So basically, when you press...
Wine just happened.
Wine was going to happen or vinegar was going to happen. And which one do you want? You either have wine or you have turpentine. I mean, you know, so wine would allow your drink to stay long.
Is that another email coming in for us?
Another, it might be. We're going to check this right now, actually. Wine would allow your drink to survive and to not just rot. So wine had a purpose for being there. But wine was in every meal. Wine has its own bacteria in it, so it can keep you from getting food poisoning. Wine, and that same bacteria, when you drink it, helps your stomach if you have stomach ailments and stuff like that. But this, when it comes down to it, Jesus' first miracle, his very first miracle, was turning water into wine. All right, turning water into wine. And there's I played Bible trivia, and it's one of the cards. Why did Jesus do that? Very simple answer: to give theologians something to argue about for the rest of time. I mean, the people will say, well, that wine wasn't very strong. Baloney. The master of the feast came to the bridegroom and said, it's normal for people to put the best wine up front and put the inferior wine up in the end. So in other words, the strongest drink, the best wine is always, the tasting of wine and the testing of wine has been very constant throughout the millennia. But you have put the best wine at the end. The wine that Jesus made would have been very, very, very good wine. And wine has been
the fullness of the body.
Right, exactly. Whatever Jesus touches in turn perfect. The issue on drinking is simply this. If you say drinking is a sin, my question is, what is your evidence? What's your biblical stance? And what most people will say is because it harms the temple of the body, Holy Ghost. Your body is a temple of the Holy Ghost? Don't do anything to hurt it. Well, that phrase.
But when it, like, going out in San Francisco and California where there's a lot of smog,
yeah,
harm your body as well?
Yeah, yep, going. I mean, and, you know, they use that for alcohol and smoking cigarettes. But that's for bacon. I mean, if you're going to do that, don't go in the sun. Because that all does it. That phrase was said because people were in sexual immorality. And the apostle is saying, stop, you're the temple of the Holy Spirit. Sexual immorality is a defined sin. Don't do that. Don't defile the temple of the Holy Spirit. You are the Jesus people see. Had nothing to do with alcohol. It was drunkenness. Drunkenness is a sin.
Now, does that mean you can't get drunk at all?
You should not get drunk. No, that's a sin. Getting, okay. The Bible says drunkenness is a sin.
Now, what about buzzed? Because there's a very fine line between drunk...
I don't think there's a fine line. I think it's very difficult. I think.
Well, maybe just because I don't drink very often.
I think that people, I mean, now again, this is a line of controversy. If I go into a person's house and they have alcohol and they're Christians, I don't think anything negative of them. What I do think is you're not aware of your ministry. And I think if you have a ministry, then if you recognize yourself as a minister, then you're going to have to realize what you fall under is don't do nothing to cause people to stumble. That where Paul says, all things to those who believe are lawful. All things are, but not all things are profitable. And so for me as a pastor, if I've taken on this responsibility, too much is given, much is required. If someone comes in my house and there's a liquor cabinet, if someone sees me at the grocery store buying a bottle of wine, a six-pack of beer, I've just destroyed my ministry. I really have.
Okay. And is that because since it's...
taboo.
It's taboo, not that, but conviction.
Well, I think more, it's really, I think it's more of that people that see it will have a hard time believing I am who I say I am.
And so it's basically the perception of you need to live your life the right way and project how you truly are at all times.
I need to do nothing to cause people to not see that's Jesus. Because here's the thing. I accepted this responsibility. I can easily walk away from it. I would. I couldn't. My life would be, you know. But I'm saying I could walk away from it, and there are things that I could do. I could work certain jobs. I can go into certain areas of my life that I'm qualified for.
Why don't you be a good teacher?
I should look into that. But I could look into these things. But my life of ministry requires this first. So there are things my wife and I go without because that's the case. Now, there were some oaths people would take. There were people who would take oaths unto God and have nothing, never touch wine nor strong drink, which was hard liquor, never touch.
Oh, does that not cover beer?
Well, yeah, it would, of course, cover beer. Okay. But the beer is actually, the word beer is never mentioned in the Bible.
Oh, you're talking about the Bible, they did the oaths?
Yeah, they had these oaths of wine and strong drink.
Like last Thursday or something.
So to say that someone is sinning because they pop open a bottle, you can't. You cannot do that. If they're addicted, that's sin. The Bible makes that clear. If they're a drunkard, that's sin. But you asked about the buzz. I used to think, Chris, that anybody who touched alcohol was full of the devil and in sin and sinning against God. And I got hurt in the military. I got hurt real bad. And the army prescribes me OxyContin, pure opium, all right? Just about pure opium. And I'm prescribed this unbelievable amount of OxyContin every day. Oxycodone, when I in between. So I'm taking Percocet in between OxyContin, okay? And the church is okay because I have a doctor write a slip on it.
Now, wait, does that mean if we go to California and we have medical marijuana, the church is cool with it?
Hey, right? Is that right?
Doctor
said
I can do it.
Here was my thing. I'm getting drugged up on opium, and the church is okay because it's a prescription. And I dare the church to stay. The church wouldn't dare. I want a pastor that tells congregation, don't follow your scripts. That pastor will find himself in prison.
I believe that's called Scientology.
Oh, yeah, Scientology. But there are Christians, quote, air quote, that tell their people, don't follow medical advice.
Really?
And when they die, that pastor's going to go to prison. Murder.
Wow.
Homicide. You just gave medical advice as a non-professional. I mean, they don't do it. They don't do it. And so I'm thinking, you know what? I could drink two beers and go to sleep and sleep through the night, a couple glasses of wine, and be okay the next day. Or I can take these OxyContin and be hooked, done.
Over. Oh, yeah.
And I could not take the OxyContin. See, with the OxyContin, you got to stay on that stuff so it stays in your system. Even if you don't even realize you don't need it. So with a couple glasses of wine, I only had to have it when I couldn't sleep. So I didn't have to take it every night. And I found out that it didn't do very much at all. You know, but the point was, it was a redefining moment in my life now with my accepting the call to ministry, realizing that this is a fine line to walk. So churches will say, do you drink? And the answer is no. I don't make a habit of drinking. You know, I have accepted a responsibility. But can a Christian not drink? That's a foolish thing to say. No. There's no wall to stand against except for your own convictions. I don't feel good. And they'll say this. There's no way someone can drink two beers and not get drunk. That's a lie. I know a lot of men.
I can't.
Who stop?
I can't drink
two.
One.
What they're saying is they'll drink two, they'll drink 20.
Oh, okay.
That's what they're saying. And that's a lie. Okay. There's a lot of men that I know, two, three, and they stop.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have control. So your lack of self-control does not give you the right to say someone else can't do it. Because all you're now is projecting your own weakness. The fact is there is no wall to stand against to say drinking a glass of wine, especially when Paul told Timothy to do it. Mm-hmm. You can't undo that stuff.
Yeah. And I've been to Catholic Church. They drink in there.
Yeah, I've been to Protestant churches that drink wine at
really?
Communion. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They drink Jewish wine at communion. I've been there. I have nothing to say against
that. I like the grape juice. It tastes better.
Yeah, I think so too.
I prefer the purple over the white.
Yeah, purple. Definitely purple over white. It's good for when you spill it on your shirt. And that's just a mess. And there's nothing to pray about that. Except for, my wife's going to kill me. But I'm going to... This is not an easy question to answer. And I'm going to get some controversial remarks about this.
We welcome controversy.
And that's right. Because we want people to think. Yeah. And that's the idea, is to think.
We're not going to shy away from questions.
You cannot put a wall up where the Bible doesn't make one. You cannot say this is sin. Take me to the verse. I can take you to the verse where it says drunkenness is a sin. I can take you to the verse where it says reveling is a sin. Partying.
We're not allowed to have a party?
No, partying with alcohol and debauchery and stuff like that. Right? Lying is a sin. That slander is a sin. That I can take you to the church where it says but don't judge.
Have one that says
take me to a verse that says drinking is a sin.
I challenge all of you. Prove this man wrong.
Do it. Do it.
All right.
And I want the verse. I do not want a paragraph of explanation of why you feel. Because the fact of the matter is, that's what people do. They like to legislate taboo. They legislate what makes me uncomfortable. I can take you to the verse that says getting a tattoo is a sin. I can take you to that verse. All right? And we, I'm not trying to start a fight there. But that is the Old Testament. A lot of grounds for it still. But I can take you to the verse that talks about body piercings. You cannot find a verse that says taking alcohol, a drink, is a sin. You can't. But there's good evidence and good support to say drinking is an unhealthy thing to do. That it's not a worthwhile thing to do. That it can lead to dangerous things. That
it can turn you into SpongeBob SquarePants.
It can definitely turn you into SpongeBob.
That's called jaundice.
Jaundice. Drinking is definitely, large amounts is not good. You're talking about a prolonged life of drinking, liver problems, health problems. A glass of wine, two glasses of wine a day won't do that. But it destroys, it affects your ministry. You see me sipping on a margarita at an Outback. Chris, honestly, you come to Outback, and there I am, and you know me, we have a relationship, but you saw me
sipping. I judge you even if it was a virgin margarita. Because I'm not going to come up and smell your drink.
That's right. If it looked like alcohol, if I was drinking Shirley Temple, you'd be like, why is he doing that?
Exactly.
Why is he trying to do this? And it's not that you're sinning. It's that I've accepted this responsibility. Yeah.
And we expect more from you.
And you as well. And anyone who steps up and says, you know what, I want to do something for the kingdom of God. I want to minister my neighborhood. It's just something you got to do. It's just one of those things. Just like the style of clothes I choose to wear. I used to wear nothing but, well, I won't even get into it because I don't want, but certain people feel, I wore clothes I don't wear anymore because people judge me that I'm trying to reach and they're trying to think I'm something that I'm not. I carry myself a certain way. Things that I did. I've learned to speak differently. I've learned to articulate
more. Pretty much all this boiling down to is show Christ in your daily life.
And don't you get in the way of it.
Exactly.
Right.
All right. Another question. All right. What does the Bible preach in reference to tithing? All right. Some have said it's an Old Testament thing, and we are no longer under the law. That sounds like we're fighting, like, the police officer or something. Some say it's referred to in the New Testament, but if people don't tithe, I'm pretty sure I'm saying that right, how is God's work going to get done? See, I actually have a little insight. It's almost like we have recorded this question before, and we decided not to use it for some reason. But I'm going to say that tithing is like a number. I'm going to say like 10%. I don't know. What do you got, boss?
I think that's pretty good. Pretty good. It's a pretty good start. Tithing is a number. This thing is so out of control, it's unreal. To legislate tithe as a biblical word.
Can we call it tithy?
No, we cannot call it tithy. It's a tithe. It's a numerical term.
10%.
It was not made for the church. It was not made for the temple. God didn't say, I'm going to invent this word that you are now going to use. It was a word. It meant 10%. It's like pie.
Did God invent words?
Well, God invented language, so he gets to claim.
Because I didn't know with Adam naming everything if he named words.
Well, he wouldn't have named words if he had words. God invented language. God gets to name authority, claim mastery of all. So here's the situation: the word tithe is just a numerical term. Now it was law; it was slated as law. You could go back the very first time see the word tithe is with Abraham. When he pays a tithe, a 10% of it, he gives 10% of everything he has to Melchizedek. It's a story, and it's in Genesis. It's a good read. The
14:20.
Yes.
And I promise I'm not looking at that.
Genesis 14:20. Now, in Leviticus, God lays out how things are going to be. Okay, Jacob later on also says the same thing. God, if you will be faithful to me, I will give you a tithe of all I have. It was 10%. That word tithe, again, was not a religious term. It is a math term. It's like saying plus. you know, it's like saying a quarter. It's like saying a half.
So it's not a biblical term.
It's not a biblical term.
Here's a question. If I'm, say, a math teacher, and I'm telling people to figure out 10%, can I use the word tithy?
Yeah. It's a tithy. You cannot use the word tithy. No more tithy. No tithy. T-I-T-H-E, tithy is not a word you we say, will use. Tithe.
You say the, T-H-E. T, T-I.
Tithy. I'm so glad we're spending time on this right now. And if you're listening, this episode is brought to you
by Tithy.
I know what we're naming it. But here's, here, and we'll name it phonetically. So God legislates a tithe. The 12 tribes of Israel are set up. The tabernacle is moving. Families are moving around.
What exactly is a tabernacle? Because I did the whole Catholic thing when I was younger. And the tabernacle, from what they explained to me, I think, is where they kept the Jesus crackers. I call them the Jesus crackers because they think it's Jesus.
If you're Catholic, we want you to know this ministry is reaching to everybody, Protestant, Catholic alike. And so when we bring reference to our past, you can laugh along with us because we're going to make fun of everybody and everything.
We're equal opportunity offenders.
That's right. I have a song I'll sing for you later, but that's fine. All right. The tabernacle was the dwelling place of God. It was a tent structure that the Levitical priesthood...
That now makes sense.
We've been talking about the brazen altar. Yeah. There was a three-tiered approach to God. All right, well, I'll talk to you right now. It was a three-tiered approach to God. In the outer court was where the brazen altar, where was the sacrifice for sin and the sacrifice for peace, the peace offerings and the grain offerings, the burnt offerings. These were all done. The sin offerings, the trespass offerings were done at the outer court. And then there was a bowl there that the priests would cleanse themselves with before they entered into the most holy place, where they would burn a very special type of incense that could not be replicated outside of this area, of this temple, of this part of the temple, the tabernacle, I'm sorry. And they would burn this incense before the Lord, and they would worship. It was their place of worship. And then once a year, they'd go into the Holy of Holies, and they would do offerings for the year. Okay. It was a three-tiered approach to God, and God's presence was in the tabernacle. So what happens is there's 12 tribes. 11 of the tribes are responsible for different parts. The tribe of Joseph was over construction. They all had different responsibilities for the whole kingdom of Israel. And the tribe of Levi... Wait,
which Joseph? Joseph, Jesus' stepdaddy, or Joseph...
No. The son of Jacob.
Okay, because I get those confused. And I recently learned they were not the same people.
That's awesome. I'm very glad for that. Hey, so I'm learning. Back on task. That's right. Back on task. So the tribe of Levi, all the other 11 tribes got land inheritances. They had big, large portions of land. They split up amongst the tribes and the families. And they went to war, and they made food for themselves. They got crops and well, the tribe of Levi didn't get any inheritance. Their inheritance was due the Lord's portion. So they'd sit there in the tabernacle, and their whole job was to keep that fire burning, to keep the fire that God had originally made burning night and day. They would do all the sacrifices, and so the way they would eat was that the sacrifices that the tribe of Israel, everybody's bringing 10% in. So it's a numerical, it's really a pretty cool number system. Everyone brings 10%. All right, now you have these tribes. When they left Egypt, there were 600,000 men. That's a lot of men.
That's a lot of people.
Which, by the way, answers the questions very easily of how the pyramids were made.
Aliens.
Aliens? Ah, no. 600,000 men can move a brick. They can move a lot of bricks. All right, they can move big bricks. They had some pretty awesome engineering systems.
Wouldn't it be easier if the aliens came and moved them with their spaceship?
No aliens. And and so then what would happen is so that's 11 tribes bringing 10%. What's the percent total? 110%. So
is that why we say we give 110%?
I don't know, really. But maybe. It could come with that. Yes, we'll say yes. Yes. The answer is yes. So
lightning round question.
Now the tribe of Levi would take 10% of that 110%, which by the way would be 11% of the total offerings. And they would go and they would empty them out. They would literally pour them out before the Lord. They'd burn them out before the Lord. And that would be the 99% now was brought in through the other tribes bringing their 10%. and so the Lord make the increase. I mean, it's really how that whole system worked. So the tithe goes on. Malachi, you know, Malachi chapter 3 is quoted all the time, will you rob God? But here's the situation in the New Testament. When Jesus died on the cross, the last things he said are, it is
done.
Finished. Oh, yeah. By the way, we have someone visiting us in the studio.
It's Mr. James C. Phelps V.
Fifth.
Yes.
Oh, it's the fifth?
James C. Phelps.
V.
Phelps.
So, do you say tithe or tithe?
I say tithe.
Really? Now, is tithe in an appropriate way?
Tithe just sounds weird, and I'm pretty sure that every time we say it, someone is listening and thinking of things they should not be.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like every time a pastor uses the other word for a donkey.
Yes.
Yes, the apple word.
You hear someone go, oh.
So, we're talking about tithes, James. We're talking about, is a tithe important?
Oh, I thought you said tithes. I'm like, wait, are we going to wear tithes now?
Tithes, but the question is it mandated? When Jesus died on the cross, he said, it is done. It is finished. It's over. The law has been completed. Mm-hmm. He is the fulfillment of, I'm sorry, fulfilled. He is the fulfillment of the law.
Of the scripture.
I do not believe it is wise. I do not believe it is biblical to preach Malachi chapter 3 and say, you're going to give or else God's going to give. Jesus said it like this. You give with your left hand, so your right hand doesn't know what it's doing. Paul later on comes back and says, you need to give not out of force and not out of what you're going to get, but give out of a clean and pure heart. Jesus
basically give what you can, not because you have to or you feel obligated.
Because you want to.
Yes.
Because it's in your heart. Now, I still think the tithe is a good number. 10% is a good number.
Mm-hmm. You look at the tax code. Excess.
Yeah, and that's important too. That to tithe, you did not go bring in 10% of all of your crops. You brought in 10% of your what came in. If nothing came in, then there was
it's like if I made $1,000.
But you lost. Yeah. But it was actually in your $1,000 that you made, you had to pay $2,000 out. There was nothing that you owed God. There were some.
Okay, so let's say monthly income is $3,000.
Right.
I have $2,000 of bills, so that leaves $1,000. So it would be 10% of the $1,000.
Well, no, because and this is where it gets interesting because some of those bills are not God's fault.
Like Netflix.
Not Netflix.
Wait.
Some of those bills.
I believe that God would like Netflix.
Maybe he would. But this is why I think we got to get away from mandating people give this amount. Because you give what you can do and you should give. It's the kingdom of God. Jesus also
even
said.
Even if you choose to have certain bills like Netflix and other stuff like that.
Jesus said it like this. What you give, given it will be given back to you. Shaken down, compressed. Because what he meant by a lot of times we fluff our stuff up to be more than it is. He's going to compress it, see the truth of it all. Give, it'll be given back to you. Here's my thing, and a lot of pastors disagree with me. I've talked to pastors about this very issue. And behind closed doors, what a lot of them say is, we do this because if...
money?
Well, really, yeah, to keep the money coming in. Because if we don't preach this, then they won't do right. But that's irresponsibility. And it robs them from the blessing of being... obedient.
Let me ask you something. Did you get in this to get rich?
Huh?
Did you start doing this to
get
rich?
You know, I have to ask myself every time I collect an offering. Pastor David says this too. Every time I collect an offering, am I in ministry to make money or am I making money to do ministry? That's a question I have to ask myself. I want to see people's lives saved. But I ain't gonna lie to you. You want to live in a home. You want nice things. You want to be able to take care of your family. But I have to ask myself.
But you don't need a mini mansion.
Yeah, that's right. We are, after all, in my studio.
Fake internet studios.
Fake internet studios, that's right.
Which is perfectly awesome.
Perfectly awesome. So the issue of the tithe, and I hope I'm answering this question. I know some people can't believe he'd say this. But I believe the tithe is a good, it's 10%. And I think if you can give 25%, you should.
You can give 70%.
I think you should. Because remember, there's a story where Jesus takes to his disciples at the temple, and there's this, all these rich are given out of their money, and they're making sure everybody sees what they're doing. And they're giving large amounts.
So is that what give with the right hand so the left hand doesn't see?
They're giving large amounts. And there's a little old lady comes up and drops in like 2 pennies. And Jesus says, this woman is given more than all of them because she's given everything she's had. All right, these other ones, if you make a million, it's like A-Rod, you know, he's got, I think it's A-Rod. He's got his...
Is that that basketball player?
No.
Baseball.
Baseball, New York Yankees, shorts.
Nobody likes the Yankees.
Ooh, I think a few people like the Yankees. And tithe. And all of their 27 World Series.
But, 27, they're a little bit of a show-offs, I believe. I like the hockey. That's a sport.
Hockey. Okay, yes, hockey is a sport. But back to the tithe. These multimillionaires, their salary is $180 million a year or something like that, and they'll say how they gave $100,000 to their own. Like, come on.
Their own charity.
$100,000
to the A-Rod Foundation.
You could lose that a day for the rest of your life and not lose your salary. I mean, no. That is what it is. In our world, I believe the tithe is a good rule if you can do it. If you can't, do what you can. Be disciplined in your giving. That's be disciplined in your giving and be excessive in your giving. Don't give stupidly. Don't give your light bill away. But if you're making $1,000 a month and you're driving a $400 a month car, your finances are not honoring God. You're living above your means. Don't live above your means so you can do your part of taking care of the kingdom. The fact is,
that messes up the United States economy.
It messes up everything. It messes up you. And the tithe paid for the lights. It kept the tabernacle going. We have tabernacles. We have buildings that operate. We have expenditures. Now, I'm going to tell you this. A lot of these buildings have programs they have no business having because they think that's going to bring people in. So you have a church that may have 300 or 400 people, and they've got food banks, which is great. That's all well and good. And they've got a men's ministry and a women's ministry and a this ministry and a that ministry. And they're all going under because they're trying to look like some of these 25,000 member churches. And they have helicopter, and they have this, and they have all these expenses they have to keep up. And who pays that? Pastor? Mm. Who pays it? The people in the church. And how does it come? You got to pay that tithe. You got to bring that tithe in. Responsible giving should be paired with a responsible church.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is never give because someone has asked you to. Give because it's what you want to do.
Never give because you feel you better.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to tell you now, if you give with the idea, I'm going to give this so God can give me this, you ain't getting it. Mm-hmm. And if you do, God didn't give it to you. And if you give, and if you say, I'm going to give this because if I don't, God's not going to bless me. That's just as foolish. God's going to bless you because you're his child. If you're obedient, he loves it. If you're disobedient, you're going to get disciplined. And he's going to bring it to you. And so that's why I say this a lot. People can sin by tithing. Because they're going to make sure people know they tithe. And they're going to hold God into account. God, I give you my tithe. You better do this.
Seems harsh.
Oh, go ahead. I've heard it come out of you better, God. I've tithe. You better come through for me. It's a whole lot different than out of your emotion saying, God, I've been obedient. I've been obedient to be obedient. I need you to come. I need you, Lord. Where are you at? It's a whole different attitude and a whole different response. I think I made it clear. I believe the tithe is good. It's a percent. But 10% won't work. 5% might. Try there and try to, as you be more disciplined in your personal spending, you'll find you can give more to the kingdom. But I tell you this: if you're given to a church and you do not think they're financially sound, you have no, go somewhere else. If the pastor and his staff cannot handle money correctly, why are you going when money is a direct indicator of the reflection of a soul?
I think that's a great segue for our next question.
Okay.
All right. Next question. What do you do when you cannot agree with church folks' character?
Oh.
See, and I think I actually got a good handle on this.
Come on in, James. Yeah, James was fixing to leave.
I know. I'm sorry.
Special guest for the hold night.
On. We have to say James goodbye. Bye, James.
No. He just walked back in. Ooh. Here. The question.
That's a good question. I think I understand this question. Okay. Basically, it pretty much boils down to their position in the church.
What do you do?
Unless this is not talking about people in your church.
No, this is actually an internet question.
Oh, it's an internet question.
Internet question.
What do you do when you cannot agree with the church folk's character?
Okay. Well, by church folk, you mean a member of the church, a person who attends. And when you don't agree with that person, well, what I do when I don't agree with that person...
You pray for them and walk away.
I pray for them. I don't talk to them again. Because if I talk to them once and we don't agree a lot, we won't agree even more. And that's just not...
And when we say we don't agree, we mean...
We really...
With exciting amounts of...
Passion. We really don't agree.
Emotion.
I have tolerance like you don't know. I'm an actor. I smile through everything.
You're a professional actor?
Not yet.
He's on his way. I'm on my way. And listen, he needs to be successful.
Oh, yeah. I will. I support you in all your success.
I support y'all when I get successful. But
so is this a pledge that when you get successful, you will fund Chris Azahaz?
Nope.
Get us great.
We will see what happens.
Better web design.
I'm just moving in.
But for the question.
For the question.
Keep us a real internet studios.
So let's go to the question.
I pray for the person that I'm not getting along with and say, Lord, either help me get along with them, you know, or just help them get along with me.
This question can go a lot deeper too. It's their character. The church is full of people with issues. And some people who go to church have some weird agendas with going. Mm-hmm. There are people who show up to a church and they're going there to destroy it. They're going there there are people who feed off of division.
Is that kind of like when you went to the church to try and get kicked out?
What?
Yes.
When I met my wife, we were dating. We were actually getting ready to break up. I'm getting ready to break up with her, and she wants me to go to church. And I didn't tell her to break up with her. I decided I'm going to go to the church, and I'm going to cause this like terrible
scene.
How are y'all together? Because last episode, you were talking about how you almost got a divorce.
The Lord.
That's great.
The Lord and good people being involved. Well, I raised a ruckus at this place trying to make a scene. And the church people responded appropriately. They didn't respond. They just relaxed. If they did respond, it probably would have been pretty bad. It probably been really rough. So they didn't respond. And they let it go. In fact, the pastor invited me back. And I don't know how hard it would have been for them to do that. It must have been terrible because I was an absolute moron. I'm cursing in the middle of church. You know, it doesn't always go that extreme, though. Usually it's hidden much better. It's hidden under a, hello, my name is so-and-so, and I'm a minister at every church I go to. Mm-hmm. And I'm here just to bless God and bless you. And within a few minutes, seemingly, they're causing division. They're at the prayer meetings. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'd like to pray for Pastor. I just believe that God's showing me he has a spirit of power and division. And we need to pray over him right now and really rebuke the devil. And next thing you know, it's the old saying, you give someone an inch, they think they're a ruler. I mean, it's the truth. You give an inch, they think they're a ruler. When you don't agree with people's character, but all you can really do is Matthew 18. If they sinned against you, bring it to them. I believe in approaching things directly. It's the fastest way to get to a problem. And the fastest way to get to the bottom of a problem. And usually those people will leave. If you show a united front and address them. Now there's a flip side of that. Because sometimes what you see wrong with their character is actually a fraction of what's wrong in yours. So when you bring your approach to someone, be ready for a response. And that response may have to, you might have to look inside of you. God wants us to make this thing work. And a lot of times our problems we have with other people are reflections of problems we have within ourselves. If I have been offended by people that remind me of you, you have already lost when we meet. Mm-hmm. And the things you do are already a problem and a reminder of pain to me. So if I then approach you on stuff and hold you hostage for things you have not done, I'm not being fair. Mm-hmm. And so God is going to do things in our lives as well to cause people chip on us. When iron sharpens iron, both swords lose. Iron sharpens iron. He didn't say flint sharpens an iron, where the flint gets beat up and the knife just gets beautifully sharp. Iron sharpens iron. So in our conflict, if it's godly, If we go before people and allow elders to work with us, then in our conflict we can be sharpened, and we can be much. And you'll find sometimes people you could not stand are your closest allies along your life. I have some of my closest friends now I did not care much for at all when we met. James hated me. He thought I was just
the worst.
Seriously, or y'all being silly?
Well, you know, we never really talked about this.
Yes, we did. Yeah, we did. He's gonna say it again though.
It's just, at first I thought, wow, he talks a lot.
Oh, I feel the same way.
But, I mean, I realize I talk a lot too. Like, I think a little bit more than he talks.
And there's also things about me being overbearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very controlling or whatever, but it's not like that. I think, in my mind, I'm thinking, you know what, you know, I'm used to this, I'm used to that, I'm not used to all this change happening, and then... You know, when the change occurred, I'm like, well, it really isn't that bad. It's pretty good change. You know, I'm not in this and that relationship. I'm not devoted to this thing and that thing and stressing out, you know, I'm all good.
It takes time though. And that, from my position, when I come in a new thing, when I came here, if I come in trying to rule everything and trying to change people, if I'm trying to forcefully change people's opinions and worse, reacting to what I don't like them doing, all I'm doing is destroying.
Mm-hmm. Huh? And they'll push back.
Yeah, and I'm destroying their ability to see beyond what they think they know about me. It takes time. And so if you're given a position of authority by God to do something, if he moves you in as pastor, as leader of church, as a ministry leader, and you're coming into problems, just do your work. Love the people. Respond with kindness. Say what you say and do what you say. Do what you say you're going to do. You know, if you say this is, if you draw lines and boundary lines, hold them, but hold them with love. The phrase I like to go back to are convince, rebuke, and exhort with all long suffering. Preach the word. In and out of season. Convince, rebuke, and exhort. The rebuke is not just a rebuke. Mm-hmm. It's convince, rebuke, exhort. It's a healthy cultivating relationship. James and I, you and I, we're going to have a relationship very well the rest of our lives. And it's because...
Wait, do I have to?
No. But
okay. Only no, but a long time.
Yeah, at least for the next day.
Because that James guy is...
But the point is this, though. Listen, Chris, the point is this, that this is happening. Our relationship is at these years now because we didn't respond to what we saw. You wait. And it's okay, Lord, you put this thing together. You put this together. You're in charge, so I'm not going to take over. So when people, Christian character, you just can't get along with, that's what prayer is about. That's what patience is about. That's what forgiveness and mercy is about, so you don't let go of bitterness. And if it's just that much, approach him on it. Talk to him about it. I mean, there's nothing wrong. I want this. If I'm putting you off, to have the, hey, listen, can we talk? Not over dinner. Don't take me out to a steak. Don't take me out to have steak and mashed potatoes and green beans with garlic and bacon. Don't do that to me and then tell me I can't stand you. Let's go to that after we talk. Let's go to somewhere, sit down, I need to talk to you. I need you to listen to what I have to say, and then you tell me what you're thinking. You're doing something that's putting me off. It's this, this, and this, and this, this, and this is my response to it. Can you tell me what's going on? You know, and then the response is coming.
Yeah, we have all kinds of guests. Hello. So, oh, they can't hear you if you wave. You have to say hello.
Hello.
All right.
That's you, Sue. She'll be on more off the letter. So you will hear her more and more. And you see her on the live episodes, on the video episodes. So we're finished. I think we finished up.
Yeah. Right. We need homework. We're going to tell them how to get to us.
This is, you know what? This is a good question. I want you to think about this.
One thing I would like to add, though. You cannot expect to get along with everybody.
No. Just like you have brothers that you don't get to get along with, but you still love them. They're still part of your bloodline. And you can't discount what God's doing in them.
Yes.
You just have to hold your tongue, hold your peace. Let me say this. I think this is a good thing to think about for next week, Chris. I mean, you're a new believer in all aspects of it. And some relationships that you have with people and what are things within you that put you off to people? You know what I'm saying? Things that within yourself that put you off to people before it starts, that you have to get over to allow a relationship to begin. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And that's a very important part of building healthy relationships, is understanding who you are. That's the most important thing. So thank you guys for coming. Guys, thank you, James, for coming by.
No problem.
I think it's great you're on the show. We'll send you the bill. And
exciting.
You know, you guys, your questions were great. Please keep sending them in, because that's what this is about, is answering your questions. We had some pretty exciting stuff. Remember, it's Patrick at chrisasktheas.com. Chris.
At chrisasktheas.com.
504-264-ASK-1.
Yep, and eventually, maybe for the next episode, what we're going to do, we're going to try and get one centralized email address for you guys to ask. That way it doesn't go to one of us. That way we'll both get it. All right, thanks, and see you next time.
See you next time, guys.
See you next time, guys.
Good night.